so the globalists believe in this, but they're also going to use it as a way to put their propaganda out during news coverage of it as another way to try to unify people, knowing it's going to be much bigger than the Super Bowl because of the hype when everybody tunes into this. But also, even energetically, astrophysics, I'm not an expert on it, but I've read the articles and seen the reports. When planets align and when the moon goes in front of the sun, it does do a lot of electromagnetic things.
Look, you had to walk in Columbus's shoes to see what he went through. People thought the world was flat, for crying out loud. Then he lands on an island with a bunch of naked savages on it. I mean, that took a lot of guts. You remember when we went to Florida, the heat and those bugs?
Well, like it took guts to murder people and put them in chains.
He was a victim of his time.
Who cares? It's what he did.
He discovered America is what he did. He was a brave Italian explorer. And in this house, Christopher Columbus is a hero. End of story.
Anyways, the key to this plan is the giant laser. It was invented by the noted Cambridge physicist, Dr. Parsons. Therefore, we shall call it the Alan Parsons Project.
Oh, my God.
What now?
The Alan Parsons Project is a progressive rock band in 1982. Why don't you just call it Operation Wang Chung?
Gozer the Gozerian? Good evening. As a duly designated representative of the city, county, and state of New York, I order you to cease any and all supernatural activity and return forthwith to your place of origin or to the nearest convenient parallel dimension.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
Are you a god?
No.
Sir, the truth is, I talk to God all the time. And no offense, but he never mentioned you.
The predictions of Nostradamus are coming true, and there is a lot of new evidence to support it. But there is something shocking that's about to happen this year.
Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say, yes!
3 days hence, the bishop will hear the confession of the clergy in the cathedral in Aquila. All you have to do is confront him. Both of you as man and woman in the flesh. Will be confounded, broken, and both of you will be free.
Impossible.
As long as there is night and day, no. But 3 days hence, in Aquila, there will be a day without a night, and a night without a day.
Good morning, America. How are you? I'm Rabbi Dave.
Good morning, America, and I am Friar Rod.
Wearing that ridiculous hat.
Oh, what, the River Cats hat that I just got? It just also happens to be my initials, too, so that's the main reason I got
it. So for those of you who are not watching, and that's pretty much all of you, Rod purchased a Sacramento River Cats hat because it has an RC on it, which is...
Yeah.
I keep telling him that's not your initials. Your initials are... FR, but...
Oh, well, yeah, for the show. So,
we'll have more to say about the old Sacramento baseball situation a little bit later in the show.
We will.
But in the meantime, I want to wish each and every one of you a very happy Gay Pro.
Why?
Just in case Day of Visibility wasn't enough for you, just in case Pride Month's not enough for you, just in case Transgender Month isn't enough... This is now Gaperl, which I thought was a joke. I thought,
no.
There's no way in hell that's real. But it kept showing up on Twitter and my news feeds and stuff like that. And so I was sitting in line at the old Starbucks with the wife, whom I love dearly. And I said to her, as she ordered, I said to her, hey, welcome to Gaperl. And she said, there's no way that that's a thing.
Yeah.
And then she looked down at her Starbucks app and went, oh, is that why all that stuff's on my app?
Well, you know, Dave, a narcissist has to, was it Nars? I don't know how many.
Well, the way I say it has always been. And you could probably say, I should trademark this as my phrase. You know what I always say? Attention whores, gonna attention whore. It's what they do.
Yep. So that's exactly right.
There you go. It's Gabriel.
Yeah. Okay. We're an inclusive show.
Listen, I don't care if you're gay or not. I don't care if you're trans or not. Just don't.
We don't need days and holidays and all this other stuff.
Right. Presidential proclamations. By the way, I did get a text and an email this week about last week's show talking about that. And
okay.
It was like, but Dave, transgender day of visibility is every year on March 31st. And I said, we said that on the show. We said that. Yeah. It's Easter that moves around. Here's the problem. If you go to the whitehouse.org website, the press briefing, you can look this up. You can look it up. It's on the internet. All of the proclamations and statements are there. And so if you took all of the Easter statements made by the White House in the last 4 years and combined them into one thing, it'd be about a page long.
Yeah.
Whereas every year this year especially, the Transgender Day of Visibility thing was easily
multi-page.
Easily 15 column inches. So anyway, what's really important is what we were talking about, and that was the whole point of the show, which I thought most people got, but the one guy who didn't, well, happy Gabriel to you.
You know what I want to see? I want to see a randomly chosen day each year and have that be Spanish Inquisition Day. And nobody knows until
nobody
it
knows
hits.
What's coming. Nobody expects. That would work.
It'd be awesome.
Speaking of absolute insanity, and this is often what we speak of here, did you know that on March 1st of the year of our Lord, 1504, of the Common Era, do you know where Christopher Columbus was that day?
Oh, well, no, off the top of my head. I'd have to go check my notes.
Christopher Columbus on March 1st, 1504, actually on February 28th, or was that a leap year? I don't even know. The night before, he was in Jamaica, where Christopher Columbus, who on this show anyway, is a goddamn hero, Christopher Columbus, you know, I've never seen The Sopranos, by the way. So I know that meme, but I don't know. Well, I've never seen the show.
I've never seen the show either, so.
But on this show, Chris, I agree. So he had sailed on his, I think it was his second voyage, might have been his third, I'm not clear. And it ended up on Jamaica, where he had been shipwrecked for almost, if not an entire year. I've never been shipwrecked, but I can imagine there are worse places to be shipwrecked than Jamaica.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, it's also 1504. It is not the tropical paradise that it is today. There are no waiters to bring you Mai Tais.
No.
No lobster, none of that stuff. It is, to borrow the words of a former president, pretty much a shithole. So Columbus is having to negotiate with the Indians. Sorry, indigenous tribes, he said as a history student at Arizona State University. He's having to negotiate with them because he needs food, he needs supplies, he needs stuff. And mostly what he needs is the indigenous tribes to not kill him and his men. And so
that's a big thing.
Yeah, they keep trading trinkets for food and safety and that kind of stuff. But it's starting to wear off. You know how it is when a guest is in your home for, as Ben Franklin put it, more than 3 days? It gets old. It gets really old. And the Jamaicans are ready for Columbus to move on, but Columbus cannot move on because at this point he does not have a ship on which he may move on. What he does have is an astronomical guide. It's a book that contains tables and star positions and that kind of stuff.
Kind of like the Farmer's Almanac, but, you know, precursor.
Yeah, I'd put it at a little bit higher level than that, but, you know, life goes on. So he starts looking at this thing because he's he's concerned about his well-being. Like I said, it's starting to become apparent that the native tribes have had about enough of Columbus and the Spanish, and as I learned in my history class, American history class, from 1500 to whatever, or from before that to whatever, the native tribes weren't all that reticent about just, you know, solving the problem as they saw it in a quick and efficient means. And so Columbus is starting to get concerned. So he digs out this book that he has of astronomical charts, and he notices something from March 1st, 1504. And so he calls the leaders of the tribe together, and he does what every European person does in this era. He pretends that he speaks for God, and he informs the natives that his Christian God is really upset with them, and the way they're living is just not acceptable anymore, and by golly, if they don't straighten up, Columbus has been authorized to show them signs in the heavens, which will convince them that the Christian God is all-powerful, all-knowing, and speaks through Christopher Columbus. The natives, to their credit, look at him and say, right. At which point, Columbus points to the moon, which is high in the sky, and a lunar eclipse begins. Okay. And by the time the natives are panicked because the moon is disappearing and it's turning into blood, it's a blood moon. God said, man said, right?
Yeah.
It's a blood moon. By the time the moon is completely bloody, they're willing to do anything, say anything, agree to anything, if Columbus will just bring back the moon, if he will just convince his God to give us the moon back. So Columbus waves his hands and says, dear God, please bring the moon back. And of course, the moon comes back. And you think to yourself, there's no way in hell this actually happened. But it did. Because for some reason throughout history, eclipses have been precursors to insanity.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite films. It's not a great film. I'm not sitting here telling you, you gotta go watch this film. It's fantastic. It's not what I'm saying to you. It is a popcorn bucket and a half film. It's the kind of film that you put on in the afternoon while you're working on other things. It's just background.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Lady Hawk, and it stars a very young Matthew Broderick.
Yes.
A very young Michelle Pfeiffer. Mm-hmm. And a not so young Rutger Hauer. And for some reason, and I don't know why, the film is set in 1300s. In the early 1300s, so the 14th century France. And it was made in the early 80s. And for some reason, they had the Alan Parsons Project do the score for it. Which, look, Alan Parsons is great. I love the Alan Parsons Project. But it just doesn't fit.
It doesn't jive with the setting.
Right. It's not bad.
It's one of my favorite films too.
Yeah, it just doesn't fit. And so, if you're one of those people like me who judges a film primarily on its music, you're not going to like it. But the story is that Rutger Hauer, his character, Etienne, I don't remember his name. Anyway, he's the captain of the guard, falls in love with Michelle Pfeiffer, who the Pope or the bishop is also the bishop of Aquila is also in love with, and since the bishop can't have her, he curses Rutger and Michelle, and they are turned into animals opposites. So during the nighttime, Rutger's Hauer is a wolf, and during the daytime, her character is a hawk, hence Lady Hawk. And of course, Matthew Broderick's character, Philippe the Mouse, is a thief who is stealing stuff. A pickpocket, and long story short, he gets mixed up with these two after he escapes from Aquila, the bishop, which doesn't set well with the bishop, And Rutger Hauer's character helps him escape and blah, 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 blah. And he's going to kill the bishop. And, of course, the priest who caused all this to happen by not shutting up when he should have and spilling the beans on the two to the bishop, he has figured out a way that they can break the curse. And the way they can break the curse is they must confront the bishop together as man and woman, which is impossible because they can't be man and woman at the same time.
Because they always change into the animal shape opposite.
But what if there is a day without night and a night without day?
What? Are you saying that there was an eclipse?
There is a solar eclipse coming in 3 weeks. God has told me that there will be a day without night and a night without day. All you have to do is confront the bishop during the eclipse. The curse will be lifted. And, of course, Rutger Hauer's character's response to that is...
I'm going to kill him.
No, he says to him at that point, he says, God has not forgiven you. God has made you mad. Which is a great line that goes to waste in a movie that could have been so much more. All this comes to mind because as I was sitting here this week perusing the interwebs and laughing about conspiracy theorists with Bill and Rod, I came across an actual article. I'm not making this up. This is an actual article in the media that says that multiple states, that is states here in the United States of America, have declared a state of emergency because
For the eclipse?
There is an eclipse on Monday. I am not kidding you. And so I said to myself, as I said to Rod and to Bill, there's no way in hell this is legit. And so I started digging. And what to my wondrous eyes should appear? I mean, if you've been around me for a while, you already know the answer. Because you can look it up. It's on the internet. In the middle of this whole declarations of state of emergencies by states for an eclipse, a solar eclipse, which happens every... They are as predictable as a sunrise and have been since the 1500s when Christopher Columbus was on Jamaica. Everybody knows they're coming. Everybody knows what they are by now. Even the Jamaicans have gotten the word that this is just a natural phenomena. Even the Bishop of Aquila. Sorry, I'm American, so I say it Aquila, but it's actually Aquila in French. But anyway, the point is even the Bishop of Aquila has gotten the word by now.
Yeah.
This is a natural occurrence. It's no different than the wind or the tides. It happens.
Yeah.
But of course, Alex Jones has gotten himself in the middle of all this and has turned turned this into a giant conspiracy theory right up there with Christopher Columbus in 1501.
Well, you know, so don't get me wrong. The states themselves are drunk on emergency powers. So you give them any reason to declare one. Oh, state of emergency.
It's
hey, guess
eclipse.
What? It doesn't matter. They want the power.
Glad it's not up here, because if it was, Jay Inslee would be out there declaring emergencies.
Yeah.
Now, the whole genup of all this is that Alex Jones, who some of you are going to send me texts and emails, I can already predict it. I can already hear you typing now. But Dave, Alex was right about COVID. Well, much like that clown from Texas, what's his name? Can't even think of his name now. Paul, Ron Paul. It's not like he was the only one saying it. If he'd have been the only one saying it, like Nostradamus or something, it's a different story. But here we go. Alex Jones has informed us that the eclipse is a government conspiracy to inflict martial law upon us.
So the state's response is to declare state
to declare a state of emergency. And I thought to myself, if I was the governor of one of these states and some idiot came into my office and said, hey, Alex Jones is out there spreading conspiracy theories, remember, my first reaction would be, how much money do we have in the budget for a big-ass party?
Wait, which one of my teams actually following Alex Jones? You're right. Fired.
Right. Well, you can't. Once you know it's there, there's a concept known as, it's early in the morning, and it actually is Sunday, so my brain's not moving quite as quick. This is not Saturday. There's this idea in psychology that once you're aware of something, you notice it everywhere.
Yeah.
So now that I'm aware that Alex Jones is doing this, now I'm seeing it everywhere. So it's the same kind of thing. But the states are declaring a state of emergency for an eclipse because Alex Jones says that it's a government conspiracy to inflict martial law on America. Which, if you literally took 10 seconds to think about it, you go, okay, if the eclipse is an excuse to inflict martial law on America, why are only 6 or 7 states declaring state of emergencies?
Yeah.
Why isn't Jay Inslee, who is the nutbag of nutbags when it comes to power mad, why isn't he declaring a state of emergency for the 20% of an eclipse we'll have up here, which will be so small that it's not even noticeable? That's what they said on the news this morning. Don't even bother going outside because you won't notice it.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, how many times in history has an eclipse done this?
I know that my son walked into the room last night and, are we all ready for tomorrow? I'm like, or for Monday? I'm like, looking at him like, what the heck? What's going on Monday? You don't know? The eclipse. I'm like, oh my gosh.
You guys aren't even going to see it, are you?
I don't think so.
We get 20% up here, but I just thought it was weird that once again, number one, states are declaring state emergencies, which just makes you go, what the
WTF?
Right. But that they're doing so in response to an Alex Jones ginned up conspiracy theory that they're going to inflict martial law is, well, it feeds into my favorite theory about radio. I have a theory about radio. I've told you this theory before.
Sure. Let's hear it again.
And that is, to actually make any money in radio, you have to be batshit crazy on the air.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if you're accurate, right? As long as you're batshit crazy, people will send you money.
Yeah.
Which has been my problem from day one. I actually had that meeting at one point with a program director who did not know anything about talk radio, explaining to me that all I got to be is more intense, more riled up, more rants, and you'll be successful. To which I answered, you know, look, I'm not Michael Wiener. I can't pretend to be something that I'm not. I am who I am. If you don't like it, well, there's a dial. Go somewhere else. If I have to pretend to be something I'm not, and by the way, I don't count the whole Dave Diamond thing. That wasn't my idea. And I never told you who I wasn't. So... I just can't be that guy. I'm sorry. I can be sarcastic for 10 or 15 minutes.
Okay.
But I can't pretend that there's an eclipse and it's going to be used by the government as an excuse to inflict martial law on you.
Well, that is until they actually declare states of emergency.
Right.
It's like, well,
I just want to call those states up and say,
That's hilarious.
But in the meantime, if you want to send me some money, you can. Just go to my website, plausiblylive.com. There's a Ko-Fi button there, and you can send me all the money you want. I'm just not going to be batshit crazy for it. But I suppose it's possible that by this time, Monday night, martial law will be inflicted in Alabama. Pretty sure it won't have anything to do with the eclipse, but yeah, it's certainly possible. Welcome back. I'm Dave.
I'm Rob.
And speaking of crazy people doing crazy things, did you hear this week that Russian television, that's what they call it now, Russian TV.
Okay.
Back in the day, we used to call it TASS, T-A-S-S. And TASS was the Russian news agency. And whenever you would see a news report, this is, TASS reported this day that blah, 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 blah. You just knew that the rest of it was nonsense. But that has been replaced by Russia TV, which has talk shows on it, where they stand around, news talk shows, like The Five, mm-hmm. where they sit around and talk about the news of the day. And this week, some weird stuff happened. France informed the world that they were going to be willing to support Ukraine in the war against Russia, which is a little odd because France, you may not know this, is not part of NATO.
I didn't know that.
France made a big deal back in the 60s, possibly the early 70s. Anyway, France withdrew from NATO. They didn't want any part of NATO. France has their own ideas militarily. They have their own ideas about things. And we don't have time to go through all that, but France is not part of NATO. That's the important thing to understand here. And so when France comes out this week and says, we support Ukraine in its war, and we're willing to send troops to Ukraine and weapons. We're willing to do this. Now, France has said, we didn't say that. But of course, if you go look at all the newspapers and the newspaper reports, and it kind of looks like they did. Hmm. Now, grant you, it's in French, and I don't speak French. Maybe there's a subtlety to French language that I don't get. Maybe the Bishop of Aquila was, you know, involved in this somehow or another. Ooh, I don't know. But France appears to have said they're going to support Ukraine, up to and including troops, which, of course, upset these people on this Russian TV show, who, while it's just a TV show, seem to speak for the Russian government. They seem to be Putin's mouthpiece. Does that make sense?
Yeah, because they removed the people that don't.
Right. So they explained to us this week in a very, it's one of those statements that I love because 99% of people won't get it. The Russians said that, you know, if I were the French, I wouldn't be talking about things like that because 1814 might happen again.
Okay, what happened in 1814?
Most of the people scratch their heads and go, what are you talking about? In 1814, Russia, as part of the coalition, occupied France, along with England and Prussia and everywhere else. Napoleon, they threw Napoleon out. They conquered France. So this veiled historical threat is, you better not, or we'll march into Paris like we did before. 200 years ago. Right?
I'm sure that went over well.
Yeah. It's kind of like most people in France are scratching their head going, when was Russian? Because nobody remembers the Napoleonic Wars. But at the same time, it struck me as a clever and direct response to this story that France was going to support Ukraine. With the added element of most of the world will have no clue what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and France not being a member of NATO, I mean, what other treaties exist that would help defend France if they were invaded?
Right. Well, I have to assume that as a quasi-ally, if France was invaded by Russia, we would probably respond, right? This is the World War I thing all over again.
We'd at least send cheese.
It's commercials about cheese in France, right? In World War I, Austria-Hungary has an argument with Serbia. Okay, that's it. Serbia sends a guy to execute or assassinate the Archduke of Austria-Hungary, a country that doesn't even exist anymore. Because of this little argument between these two countries, Austria-Hungary has an alliance with Germany, but Russia has an alliance with Serbia. And Russia and France has an alliance with Russia. So this little argument between Serbia and Austria-Hungary turns into World War I, which then we get involved with because, you know, shit happens, I guess. Millions of people die, and there you go. So I don't know what's going to happen now. Is France going to actually support Ukraine? Is Russia going to invade France via Germany? I mean, that's the part I don't get. Does anybody at Russia TV understand that France and Russia are not next to each other?
I have no idea.
You're going to have to go through
fly
Germany.
Over, yeah.
You got to go through Germany to get there. Or Hungary and Austria.
Yeah, well, you know.
And I'm just
those crazy
saying,
Ruskies.
Yeah. Just saying those countries aren't likely to, they're not likely to agree to this, would be my guess.
Yeah.
But there you go. Meanwhile, is it Denmark?
Yeah.
Denmark, which is a lot closer to Russia than France is having problems with their missiles. So.
At least on one of their ships, anyway.
So what happened here? Technical problems?
Basically they said a Danish Navy missile could launch any minute due to a technical error, forcing the country to close an area of airspace and warn ships of the potential accidental strike. The technical problems arose on a Harpoon missile on the frigate Niels Juel during testing at anchor in the, I'm not going to say the name of that city, but a naval base west of the capital of Copenhagen. The launch vehicle, the booster, is activated and currently cannot be disabled, said the military. So they have a launch vehicle missile ready to go.
I'm pretty sure the missile is probably, I don't want to call it inert, but it probably isn't armed.
Let's see here. I thought they said that it was, there was a payload on the missile.
Right.
But it wasn't active. Yeah, it wasn't armed.
Yeah, that doesn't mean that if the missile doesn't launch, it won't cause some problems. Because it'll go out and it's got fuel on board and stuff like that, depending on where. Yeah. I read a story somewhere about that happening before to them. Where they accidentally fired a missile and it hit a house or something. And it wasn't armed, but it did burn. So, yeah, that stuff happens. Been there, done that.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, well.
In 1980, I was sitting in the Missile Control Center on Michigan. And the day before, we had done what are known as tube entries. We had installed some missiles, loaded them, unloaded them, installed the guidance assemblies in them and the likes of that. So we're sitting there, and one of the normal functions after that is you spend about 24 hours drying out the missile tube. So you're getting constant humidity alarms. Now the humidity alarms are on launcher panel, which is over there, and they go beep, beep, beep with this flashing light. And the launcher watch just reaches over and pushes the button and doesn't worry about it.
You silence the alarm.
Silence the alarm. So about 4 in the morning, it's me and Dave Donnelly. No, it's Howard Pace. Sitting in Missile Control Center. We've been sitting there all night with this thing going beep, beep, beep. And I'm exhausted. So I got to get up and walk around. And I'm just kind of standing near his panel. The light's going off. And he just blindly reaches over and pushes it every minute or whatever. And I finally look down at it. And I notice something on the panel. And I said to him, Howard, that's not a humidity alarm. And he looks over and says, well, what is it then? Because he'd already silenced it. And I said, well, look at it. Big red light. Gas generator armed.
That's the problem of having the same alarm sound for everything, right?
Right. Right. Now, the gas generator, very quickly, is the... It's a rocket motor, produces 65, 68,000 pounds of thrust, and it shoots downwards through a tube that then goes into the missile tube and pushes the missile out.
Sure.
So it's a rocket motor that pushes the missile out. Well, the hatch is closed right now, meaning that if this thing goes off, the missile goes into the hatch and explodes. And
yeah.
Now, the nuclear weapons on board are not going to go off. But it's going to be a hell of a mess. In fact,
it would be kind of like a dirty bomb effect in a way, wouldn't there?
Because of the way it would be some of that potentially, but of more importance is when you fire off an explosive like that inside a closed environment, what happens? Something's got to give.
Yeah.
Well,
something pops.
The weakest point is the bottom, which also happens to be the bottom of the ship. So you blow out a hole in the bottom of the ship, what happens?
Yeah, it doesn't, yeah, things don't like that. Ships right. don't like that.
Well, the bigger problem is how does a gas generator get armed? You're supposed to have a key to do it. So we immediately call away security violation missile department, and I run down to the missile department, even though I'm the on-watch fire control supervisor, which I'm not supposed to leave missile control center, but I do because... What's more important right now?
Yeah, life safety.
Get down to the lower level. Some missile tech wanders in like, what's going on? He's rubbing his eyes. Like, launcher, lower level, Petty Officer Bowman, Petty Officer so-and-so have established two-man rule, blah, 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 nuclear weapon safety and security and all that. Anyway.
Is this a ship-wide alarm that goes off?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Everybody was, this goes all the way to squadron, man. Everybody's up. So, long story short, we have to... We have this armed gas generator with a missile in the tube. Now we've rolled the ring and opened the hatch so that in case it does go off...
You're not sinking the ship.
The missile will squirt out and just kind of fall over, which is kind of funny if you think about it, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, they determine that we have to remove the gas generator. But the only way to do that is to remove the missile from the tube. Can't leave the missile in the tube and pull the gas generator. So we're moving back to the explosive handling wharf to offload this missile.
Mm-hmm.
But at this particular point in time, there is no weapons procedure, nuclear weapons procedure, to offload a missile that still has a guidance assembly installed in it, which means that somebody is going to have to go into the missile, pull the guidance assembly out before we can offload the missile.
Ugh.
So three of us... I guess we volunteered. I don't remember. I don't actually remember raising my hand to do this, but three of us end up doing it. Myself, Dave Donnelly, and somebody else. And I'm technically the reader, so I'm only halfway in the missile. I'm not all the way in, which means that if the thing does pop off, I get cut in half. The other two guys are actually inside the missile. Theoretically, they could go for a ride. And maybe get out. Likelihood is pretty low, but theoretically, they could. What I remember most about that is this is a 4 to 6 hour procedure.
Depending on
Chief Long, Richard Long, not making that up. Standing there with his lighter clicking. And he says to Dave Donnelly, he says, so how long is this going to take you? Donnelly looks at him and says, that depends. Are you going to watch us or not? Chief thinks about it for a second. He says, no, I've got paperwork to do. Donnelly looks at him and says, we'll be done in 45 minutes. And we were. I can admit that now because it's, you know,
that's 40
funny. Years later and those missiles don't even exist anymore. Normally, you have to follow the procedures. But I can assure you that we got done very quickly well, that day.
In an emergency situation, you kind of have to go with the flow.
You don't violate nuclear weapons. There's no, you don't violate nuclear weapon security rules. Nuclear weapon safety and security rules are inviolatable. You can't break them. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Okay.
So I feel for these Danish guys, but I don't know who's going to crawl in there and disarm that thing. God bless you, whoever you are. Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Dave.
I am Friar Rod.
So, was LSU never on the court for the national anthem or not?
I don't know. The only thing I saw that was related to that was a tweet that saying they were never on the court, but I don't have any kind of...
One guy says that they were never on the court ever the entire season for the national anthem. For those of you not keeping up, LSU, Louisiana State University's women's basketball team, the defending women's champions. Should have had Bill on to talk about this because he's the expert on women's basketball now.
Oh, yeah.
They were not on the court for the national anthem in the semifinal game of the final game of the Sweet 16.
Mm-hmm.
And they got their asses handed to them. And everybody's excited about this because, well, see what happens when you skip the national anthem?
Well, yeah.
But is it a ginned up story or not? This is my question. So one guy says that they've never been on the court for this. Which would make sense to me, except the coach didn't say that. It's not the coach of the team saying that. The coach said, and I'm paraphrasing here, well, we didn't know the schedule and we didn't know we were not aware that the anthem was going to be played. Which doesn't help your case any.
No, considering that it's played before every sporting event.
Moreover, does it help your case to say now, well, we're never on the court for this?
No.
Does that help? I mean, it's not that I care about women's basketball, because I don't. But I don't like when the national anthem is used as a hammer or anvil thing here.
Mm.
And if they're never on the court for it, I disagree with you, but fine. But why didn't the coach just say that? Look, it's our normal pregame system. We haven't been on the court for the national anthem once this season. If the coach knows that, why didn't the coach say that?
Oh, because of the backlash that they're already getting for not being on the court.
Right, but how did this improve that?
It was a Kobayashi Maru, Dave. It was a no-win situation.
Okay. If it is such a situation, a no-win situation, do you benefit more by saying, look, our policy the entire season has been not to be on the court, maybe we need to reevaluate that? Or is your best move to say, we didn't know, sorry? Well,
your first reaction, and this happens, you know, when you have multiple kids, that they always tend to say, it wasn't me, but this person, and they point the finger at their brother or sister, right? So it's trying to deflect the blame.
Right.
That's the first natural reaction.
I guess, but you're the coach of the defending national champs.
You think
nobody
that
noticed
just
this last year?
Yeah.
Were they on the court last year before they won the national championship, or were they not on the court last year before they won the national championship?
Well, how does this differ from the WNBA? Aren't
well,
they not on the court for the...
No, I don't watch the WNBA. You need to ask Bill about that. He's the women's basketball expert. Not me.
He's got it on the DVR.
Probably does. From what I hear, he has season tickets. So, at any rate, I'm not saying it's a ginned-up story, but I think it's a ginned-up story. And, of course, we're supposed to get all hot and bothered about it. You know, we're supposed to be all me about it.
Yeah.
But if they've never been on the court for the thing, then who cares? They got beat by a better team. And the better story about this whole thing isn't the national anthem thing. It's the gal who last year, and I only know about this because it's been on, you know, it's on every sports center you watch. The gal that won the championship, they beat Iowa last year in the championship game. This is the team they were playing.
Uh-huh.
And the one smart-ass gal got in the face of the really good player, Caitlin, whatever her name is, and did, see, I've got a ring on my finger now thing in her face.
Okay.
And now she is crying. I mean crying now. Because people are being mean to her for... They're picking on her because she lost.
No, they're picking on her because she's an a-hole.
Well, there's that, but, you know, speaking of things you can't admit, I mean... I think I figured out a way, though, to improve basketball across the board.
Okay.
You ever see Semi-Pro, the movie Semi-Pro?
I don't recall. I don't think I have.
It's the Will Ferrell basketball film about the old American Basketball Association.
No, I didn't see it. No.
There's a scene in there where the commissioner says, can we try to cut down a little bit on the fighting on the court? So during the commercial breaks, they fight.
That's funny.
And then as soon as the commercial breaks are over, they stop fighting. Which I think would improve basketball. It certainly has improved hockey.
Well, yeah.
The other night, the Devils and Rangers are playing, two teams that do not like each other and are scrapping for a playoff spot. So this was awesome. This happened, by the way, at the Seattle Thunderbirds game the other night when I went there. Yeah. Not to the same degree. It was just two people.
Yeah, it wasn't like seconds into, or not even hundredths of a second.
They dropped the puck and they started fighting. They dropped the puck. The two guys that were in the faceoff circle started fighting. Same thing happened to the Devils Rangers game the other day. All 10 players on the ice, they dropped the puck and they just started fighting. They didn't even go after the puck. They just started fighting. Brawl.
Well, you saw several start fighting, and you saw a couple of others just like skating around looking for someone to fight with.
Right, because that's what you do. And what's even better is when you're the goalie in a situation like that. Because the unwritten rule is goalies can only fight goalies.
Okay.
So... trust me, I've been there. You're standing at the other end. You're standing in the net. You're looking at the other goalie going, what are we going to do? Because I don't really want to get involved. But if you come out, then I have to.
Doesn't it at least take 30 seconds to get some of the goalie padding off? So
you don't
even
take off any of the padding. You just drop your stick and your gloves and
okay. And
your helmet. The other unwritten rule of fighting in hockey is you're supposed to take your helmet off.
Okay.
No one ever does. But goalies would. But at any rate, what I found amusing about this was the Rangers' comments after. The Rangers referred to this, and I'm not making this up, as a, quote, team-building exercise, unquote.
Leave it to hockey.
8 players get ejected. Massive fight. Team-building exercise. Now, wouldn't that improve basketball right off the bat?
Yeah, it would.
Imagine if you ejected the starting 5 from each team, or 4 out of the starting 5 for each team instantly. So they had to play the entire game with their backups. Wouldn't that be a better game?
I think it would be.
And so look, I'm not saying that the women's basketball needs my advice. I'm just saying, look to the masters of this stuff and you will learn, Grasshopper. See how it goes. kind of like the Colorado Rockies, who I criticized last week intensely for being a team committed to mediocrity.
Yeah, you did. You did state that.
Which was followed up this week. In case you were wondering who listens to this show, there were 3 articles in the Denver papers this week basically saying what I said. That the Rockies are a joke. That they're committed to mediocrity, and that the Fanatics jerseys are so bad that they have the color purple wrong. just everything you can imagine about the Rockies. And even that wasn't the biggest story in baseball. The biggest story in baseball, of course, is that Rod's beloved A's are moving to Sacramento.
They
will be not the Sacramento A's.
No.
They will just be the A's.
The Athletics.
Are they going to be? Is that what they're going to go with? Does that make sense?
I haven't seen where it's settled on what they're going with, because some people have said Sacramento, but I'm like, we'll see what happens.
So this immediately pissed me off. Because first off, Sacramento is a very solid AAA team,
mm-hmm.
which Rod happens to be wearing the hat for.
The River Cats, yeah.
The River Cats, who are the Giants' AAA affiliate. So the A's and the Giants, who hate each other and always have, suddenly the A's move into the Giants' AAA market without mm-hmm. even asking. Major League Baseball didn't say, yeah, do that. They just did it. Moreover, I have good friends who work for the Sacramento River Cats.
Mm-hmm.
And my initial assumption was, well, what's going to happen to them? Now I'm told by the A's, who lie about everything,
yeah,
that this will have no impact on the River Cats at all. That Major League Baseball will work around the schedule of the River Cats to wedge in the A's on those days.
Okay.
That's what we're told.
Well, that's going to be tough, but...
Yeah, it's going to be tough. How are they going to make that work?
I don't know. No, they haven't said how that's going to work, really, other than even if they were playing, if they had baseball, 24/7 up there for weeks on end, I mean, people would love that, but
you're
not
going
to be able to do that.
It's a beautiful ballpark.
It is.
But it's also a AAA ballpark, and they have to expand it by 6,000 seats, I think, to make it, it has to be a minimum of 20,000 seats to be a Major League ballpark. And by agreement with the Major League Baseball Players Association, it has to meet certain levels. And if it doesn't mm-hmm. meet those levels, they can't play there. So now they're going to have to pay for that expansion.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Tear that down when they leave?
I don't think so.
Would the Sacramento A's really be that bad of an idea?
I don't think so. I often thought that when they first started talking about moving out of Oakland, that Sacramento is a great market.
And theoretically, then, you could move the River Cats franchise
mm-hmm.
to Oakland. Or closer to the, in the Bay Area there, couldn't you?
Yeah, you could.
I don't know. I'm not convinced that moving to Las Vegas is going to be all that great of a deal for...
I don't know. The only thing is the stadium that they're looking to build looks beautiful from the concept.
Right. Looks beautiful in concept, but...
Amazing, but yeah.
They're talking
we'll
3 to 4 years.
Well,
If it gets approved and if it gets built, which isn't that sure of a thing anymore.
So maybe what Sacramento A's stays a thing in Sacramento?
Well, based on what happened in Kansas City this week, Kansas City has the Royals, who have one of the most beautiful stadiums in existence. Kauffman Field, used to be known as Royal Stadium, but changed the name. The Chiefs have Arrowhead, and the Chiefs are run by the wealthiest family in football, the Hunts,
mm-hmm.
who have more money than God. I mean, they just do. It's just... Not criticizing it. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying if the Hunts wanted to build their own stadium somewhere, open up the wallet and do it. And they wouldn't even notice it. Take it out of petty cash.
Sure.
But instead, they tried to get the citizens of the city of Kansas City to pay for it, for a new stadium for the Chiefs and the Royals. And the good citizens of Kansas City said, get out of here. No, we're not doing that.
Well, it doesn't any shrewd businessman try to do that. I mean, you're going for a win-win. I can't blame him for trying,
yeah. But
yeah.
But at the same time, it's funny that the fans in Kansas City are like, no, what are you going to do? Move? The Kansas City Chiefs. Are the Kansas City Chiefs going to up and move because they didn't get a new stadium in Kansas City?
Hmm.
And where are they going to go? Back to Dallas?
I don't know.
Oklahoma City? The Oklahoma City Chiefs. That would suck. That would be a dagger in my heart.
You know what's
going to
happen? They're going to end up in Oakland.
Oh, God. Where are the Royals going to go? I mean, is the people of Kansas City have called their bluff is what they've done. Yeah. And there's no way the Chiefs are moving. The Royals could move, but not realistically. So given that Kansas City has come to its senses, what's the chances that Las Vegas comes to its senses and says, you know, it's probably not a good idea to keep raising the taxes on the tourists who are coming here?
Yeah.
Because eventually they're going to say, it's too expensive.
Yeah.
And we're not going to come there anymore.
Well, when your luxury fees for staying at a hotel are more than the cost of the room for the night.
Yeah. And eventually they're going to say, well, we're not doing this anymore. And then how are you going to pay for your fancy new ballpark?
Yeah.
You're not going to. Although I guess in theory, what you could do, this is just a theory, you could go to a Dodger game and see Shohei Ohtani hit his first home run as a Dodger. Which for some reason, and I don't get it, is supposedly important. It's one home run. It's home mm-hmm. run number one as a Dodger.
Yeah.
He's like 300, 400 behind the leading Dodger home run hitters. It doesn't matter. And it was a pointless home run anyway. They were already ahead. You want to impress me? Hit home runs when you're behind or you need to tie the game.
Grand slams. Grand slams are always fun.
The fan who caught the ball was pretty excited. She thought she was going to get at least $100,000 for the ball.
Well, didn't she not even catch it? It just ended up by her feet?
Didn't even catch her. It just fell on the ground right in front of her, and she just picked it up. In all my years of going to baseball games, minor league, major league, everything, do you know that I have gotten one baseball at a game?
Really?
And that baseball I picked up off the ground because I happened to be on the field during the pregame warmups.
Okay.
Cincinnati at Atlanta. And the ball was thrown by Mariano Soho, who was a pitcher back for the Reds in those days. And my ex-wife's favorite team was the Reds. And he saw me standing there, and he just sort of tossed the ball over there, and it hit the ground and rolled. And I picked it up thinking, this will get me laid. Didn't, but... At any rate, the point being that that's the only ball I've ever gotten at a baseball game. This gal gets Ohtani's ball. It just lands at her feet.
Mm-hmm.
Picks it up, thinks to herself, ching, ching, $100,000. So that's what the River Cats or the Chiefs could do is they could go catch Ohtani baseballs and cash them in, right?
They could. Yeah, they could.
Apparently not. You know what an Ohtani home run ball is worth in Los Angeles?
Well, couple of didn't hats. She get a, well, she got assaulted by security first, right?
Well, that's one yeah, one way to look at it, but she got a couple of hats out of it.
She got a free frisking.
One of which is signed, I think.
Yeah, I think I saw a couple of hats signed and a ball signed. It wasn't the ball, but a right. ball signed.
Right. Woohoo! Now, I've always been of the opinion that if I were at a game like that and I caught a ball that was of some historical significance,
yeah,
I might hint that I'd sure like, what I would really like is one of those Major League Baseball gold cards that they gave to the hostages when they came back from Iran.
Yeah.
That's two tickets to every game. You just walk up, show your gold card, you get out. I'd like one of those, please. But the reality is I'd just turn the ball over. It's just a baseball.
Hey, well, you know what? Even a card to get like free food at a game, right? You'd still pay for the tickets of the game, but hey, I want free food and a beer.
Especially in Minnesota. Minnesota. We went to a game in Minnesota last year, and it was mm-hmm. great. Because not only was the game good, the tickets were relatively inexpensive. They were $15 for a major league game.
Oh, that's not bad at all.
And the hot dogs were like $4.
Wow.
Which you can't even get a $4 hot dog in Tacoma.
No.
So it was a good experience. Anyway. Point is that sports world is just as wackadoodle as the states declaring states of emergency. Will games stop on Monday if they're already afternoon games? Will games stop because of the eclipse?
Yeah.
better stop. It's getting dark. And I actually read an article about this. I'm not making this up. Major League Baseball has shifted all of the start times post-eclipse. You know why?
Why?
Follow me here. Because it's environmentally unfriendly to turn on the lights for 10 minutes and then turn them back off again.
Oh.
It's the kind of thing that makes you say,
WTF?
Welcome back. I'm Rabbi Dave.
I am Friar Rod.
And this is, of course, something of a sad occasion. Rod is getting ready to get on an airplane and fly to Georgia, which is not sad, but...
No, it's going to be a great time. But for this show, it's going to be sad because...
Because you're going to be gone for a little while.
Yeah.
How long are you going to be down there?
A couple weeks.
So this is so he can go see his grandchildren.
Yep.
And our listener, Dylan.
Yeah.
I think he's our only listener in Georgia. But
he may be.
If not, Texas.
He religiously listens to this show, though. If it doesn't come out on time, I get text messages.
This one may not. We've had some editing difficulties today, so you probably hear it in my voice. But anyway, point being that Rod's going down to Georgia. Rod went down to Georgia. He was looking for a...
Yep.
Soul.
There's a song in that somewhere.
Right. Anyway, he's going down to see his grandkids, which is cool. And so normally we would take a couple of weeks off because doing this show by myself is... But I won't be here either.
And why is that, Dave?
So my surgery is now scheduled. It's hard scheduled for Friday, April 12th.
Okay.
So a week from this week on Friday. Now, that said, I love my wife with all my heart. I want to be clear about this. My wife is a professional medical person.
Uh-huh.
When we discovered that we were expecting back in 2009, Thanksgiving of 2009, my wife, who is by profession a labor and delivery nurse, proceeded for the next 9 months, every fucking day of the next 9 months, to explain to me in unnecessary and uncomfortable detail all of the things that could go wrong but won't.
It's okay. I don't need to know that then.
This could happen, but it probably won't. This could also happen, but probably won't. And then, of course, in April, May or April, would have been, I don't know what it would have been. The amniotensis test.
Uh-huh.
She went to do that, and it did not go well. And we thought we had lost Ben that day. So here's this. This could go wrong, but probably won't. This could go wrong, probably won't. This went wrong. We got a problem. So I end up taking the day off from work like 10 minutes before the show started. I'm like, I got to go. Sorry. Just loading a best of them. Anyway. Turned out it wasn't, but, you know, there you go.
Yeah.
So I'm already a nervous person. Very insecure. I know I don't sound it, but I'm...
A lot of anxiety, Dave.
I'm very, very much anxiety, very much nervousness, all those kind of things. So then it went on again. It starts again. Well, this could go wrong, but probably won't. July 9th.
I don't want to hear it.
July 9th, 2010 is a Friday. I get home from work. She says, it's time to go to the hospital. So we go to the hospital, which is literally 100 yards away. It's where she works. So, of course, we get there and things start going wrong. So all the things that she warned me about are now happening. And I am not doing well.
So what you're saying, Dave, is ignorance really is bliss.
God, yes. I went through about a half a bottle of tequila that night before they finally called me back at 3 a.m. We had to go to C-section. Anyway, as you know, everything worked out okay. So yeah. I am facing surgery on next Friday. And my beloved wife, whom I love with all of my heart, who is a nursing professional, keeps bringing up crap that could cause problems. It's not bad enough I got endocrinologists doing this.
Have you asked her why she feels the need to do this? I mean, obviously it's out of love. She wants you to know, right?
But my wife obsesses about things.
Okay.
And then says, that's it, I'm done. I'm not obsessing about it anymore.
But then continues.
For 15 seconds. So that's what I said to her yesterday. She's going on and on and on about this problem that I have that might... They did a test for MRSA. It's part of my pre-admission. I don't have MRSA, but I do have some sort of staph bacteria.
Okay.
That's apparently benign. And for hours, she went on about this. And then she finally says, I'm done talking about it. And I looked right at her and I said, I doubt it. So the surgery is scheduled for Friday. I'm nervous. I'm already stressed and nervous about it. I mean, it just is, folks. What they're going to do, and I think we've talked about this, the previous 8 years ago, almost to the, it was March of 2016, that knee replacement has failed. It's come disconnected both top and bottom. It was weird because yesterday I was walking and I could feel it slipping.
Ugh.
So I can't even, I'm almost to the point now where I can't walk again. Ugh. Anyway. Point being that they're going to rip that whole thing out. According to the surgeon, this will take, quote, an extra 30 to 40 minutes.
Okay.
So now I've got that in my head.
Mm-hmm.
How do you get this out of there?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to know.
I shouldn't be thinking about this, but
don't tell me.
I don't want to know either.
Just do it.
Years ago when I shattered my hand,
mm-hmm.
they gave me the option of general anesthetic or kind of a local thing and you can be awake. And I thought, well, that would be cool. I'd like to be awake for this. And the nurse is behind the doctor shaking her head going, no.
No.
Which was the right choice. So anyway, that's going to happen. And I am told that I will be incapacitated for several days. And in fact, there are many differences this time around from the last time this was done. One of which is, while they are encouraging me to maintain range of motion and that kind of stuff, they really don't want me up walking around.
Huh.
Because it increases swelling and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that. There's no stitches, no staples.
But using tape and glue?
All of that is internal. I don't know. I guess it's kind of a glue, but it has a silver bandage.
Hmm.
It actually has silver in it, which apparently, and I didn't know this, bacteria doesn't like silver.
Well, yeah, yeah.
So, anyway, they're going to put that on there, and it will just naturally dissolve.
Yeah. And undead and vampires don't like silver either, right?
That's what I'm told. You know why that is, though? Because mirrors used to be made with silver.
Okay.
So this whole nonsense that vampires can't see themselves in mirrors today is nonsense because they don't have any silver in them.
Yeah.
Anyway. So they're going to do that. This time around, they have already planned out the entire rehab thing with PT and everything is already on the schedule.
That's cool.
Whereas last time it wasn't. So I am cautiously optimistic. However, she has said repeatedly, we are trading mobility for stability.
Yeah.
I've fallen many times. And so I am going to be less mobile, which doesn't, I don't know. There's a part of me that's upset about that. But at the same time, can't continue to live with this pain, can't continue to live with the instability. So we're headed in the right direction. I have a very good surgeon. Everybody around here talks about how great she is.
Okay.
Everybody. I mean, that's the first question they ask. Who's your surgeon? And when you tell them who it is, they're like, oh, man, you're so lucky. You're so lucky to have him. Her. Anyway, the point being that...
Don't piss her off now, Dave.
Misgendering my surgeon, sorry. Anyway.
You wake up and your knees are switched.
So I don't know how long this is going to be. Here's the problem that you don't know as a listener. My office, where I sit and record this, is upstairs. And it's going to be at least a week before I can get upstairs at all.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not sure, you know, how that's going to work. I don't know. It is on the plan for me this week. I'm going to revamp my office, move things around so that there's more space to be able to get in and get out. But again, I'm having a hard enough time walking right now, so I don't know how far along in that I'm going to get, but I'm going to try. And I'm hoping that by the time Rod gets back from Georgia, you know, I'm literally just sitting here. It's not like I'm dancing or anything. Mm-hmm. So hopefully in a couple of weeks, we'll be ready to go. But if not, it could be a little bit longer. And I just wanted to let you know that it's not that we don't want to be here. It's that shit happens. And there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, Dave, I can speak for some of the listeners. We'll be praying for you in a fast recovery. We're glad that the surgery isn't on the day of the eclipse, because who knows what would happen.
Oh, God. Can you imagine that? I can have some fun with that, though, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Wait, hold the surgery. God has told me to warn you that if you do not do this right, I will make the sun go away.
Yep. So anyway, you'll be in our minds and thoughts, prayers, and wishing you a speedy recovery.
Well, I do appreciate that. And of course, you can always email us at WTF@whatthefrock.org, comment on Facebook or the website. And I don't talk about this much, but you know, my text machine is still open. 209-565-DAVE. That has been one of the best things I ever came up with in radio.
Yeah.
Still get texts. I got texts this week about last week's show on that. So again, if you want to talk to me, I will tell you that I'm not as attentive to it as I used to be. I used to have it on my phone, and when somebody would text me, I'd immediately get, I don't do that anymore. Sorry. It's not that I don't care, because I do. It's just that I've got a billion other things going on. So, but I do check them. So it's one of the few apps on my phone that actually gives me the little red bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those I've turned off, but on the text machine, it's on. So I'll see it, but I can guarantee on Friday I won't be answering it.
Yeah.
I don't know about Saturday either, but now that's the other thing. I'm supposed to get out of the hospital on Saturday.
Okay. Well, that's amazing.
That's what I said. I said, I'm just not buying that, but.
So how is this going to affect your No Man's Sky playing, Dave? That's what I really want to know.
Well, I did load it up on the laptop.
Okay.
So, and it does run on the laptop. And I did get my freighter. I didn't tell you that. I didn't text you. I did get my freighter.
Okay.
I ended up paying for it. Not that anybody else cares, but I ended up buying it instead of... I couldn't find any pirates to fight. Sorry, just couldn't.
Okay.
So I ended up buying it. But... anyway, not that anybody cares, but we play No Man's Sky. So if you're on Steam and you play No Man's Sky, let us know.
That'll be good. Yeah.
We'll ignore you there, too. Anyway, on that note, please have a great eclipse tomorrow. Enjoy life, and hopefully I will see you in a couple weeks.
Yeah.
With that, I am Rabbi Dave.
And I am Friar Rod.
And this has been...
What the Frock?